12. Casey's Last Ride. Cue Ennio Morricone. West Hollywood, Whiskey A Go-Go, January 16th, 2018. The signalman takes a sip of his JTS Brown and swishes the bourbon around in his mouth for a moment or two before swallowing. He has a bad tooth that's starting to go hot, and the alcohol dulls the pain a little. That rotten molar is just one more thing he keeps telling himself he'll take care of, and just one more thing he can't ever seem to get around to dealing with. There's a framed Johnny Cash poster on the wall, Johnny Cash showing the whole damn world his middle finger, and the signalman raises his glass and a toast to the man in black, then takes another swig of bourbon. Mackenzie Regan is sitting across from him. The two of them sitting together and alone in the horseshoe booth upholstered in cherry red naga hide. She ordered a vodka and cranberry, but she's hardly touched it. Mackenzie's not really one for drinking on the job. She's not really one for drinking off it either. It's late on a Tuesday afternoon, and no one's in the club but the two of them and a couple of the staff. A Thin Lizzy cover band is scheduled to go on at 8, and the signalman keeps checking his silver pocket watch, like 8 o'clock isn't several long hours away from now. The Doors' Strange Days is playing, and it's almost enough to make him go find whoever's responsible and get them to play something else instead. Slip them a sawbuck to swap out Jim Morrison's apocalyptic crooning for any song a little less grim and a lot less fucking apropos. His life is plenty weird enough without the universe supplying a soundtrack.
"I wish you could have met her 8 or 9 years ago," he says to Mackenzie, resigning himself to the Doors.
The song will be over soon anyway, and there are better ways to blow $10.
"She was good. Most times she was better than good."
Mackenzie frowns and stirs at her drink with a pink swizzle stick, then glances up at the signalman. "Well, be that as it may, as far as I can tell, all she is now is a junkie and a burnout and a liability. Putting her back into play might be the worst move I've ever seen personnel make."
"Which just shows to go you haven't been around very long," says the signalman. "That's not to say I think she should be on the street, but there's nothing left to be gained by belaboring the obvious. And whatever Ellison is now, it doesn't negate who she was or what she did back then. You read her file?"
"Mostly," says Mackenzie. "The broad strokes. Enough to get the gist."
"Is that how we're judging folks these days? By getting the gist?"
Mackenzie doesn't reply. She just stares into her neglected drink.
"Anyway," says the signalman, "since you know the broad strokes, you know about that thing in Germany back in '09, the job she did in Babelsberg?"
"Babelsberg? Where's Babelsberg?" The signalman sighs and rubs his temples with the thumb and forefinger of his right hand. He wants a cigarette so badly that the craving is almost as painful as the occasional jolts from his bum tooth. He thinks again about ignoring the no-smoking signs and reaching for the pack of Camels in his jacket pocket. He's got a badge if anyone wants to complain, a badge that says he's an NSA agent, even if he isn't anything of the sort. No one at the NSA is going to be complaining either, and what the fuck good is a phony gold shield if it can't at least get him a smoke when he needs one?
"Potsdam," he tells Mackenzie. "I assume you've heard of Potsdam."
"Yeah, I've heard of Potsdam," she replies, and he can tell she's doing her best not to sound annoyed with him. "But I haven't heard of Babelsberg." Mackenzie takes a swallow of her vodka and cranberry, then goes back to stirring it with a swizzle stick.
"So you didn't read about the thing with Ellison in Babelsberg?" he wants to know.
"No," she tells him. "I guess not. I must have skipped over that part."
"But you got the gist," he says.
The signalman takes out his cigarettes and lays the half-empty pack on the table between them. Mackenzie points to one of the no-smoking signs, and so the signalman points at the poster of Johnny Cash flipping the bird. "Fine," she says. "I just thought we were keeping our heads down."
"I'll see if I can't smoke it inconspicuously,"
he tells her, but doesn't actually fish one of the cigarettes from the pack.
"Anyway, so Ellison's assignment in Babelsberg, in Potsdam, It was a soiree being thrown by a neo-Nazi outfit, a sort of latter-day offshoot of the Thule Gesellschaft, calling themselves the Schwarze Sonne. Crazy bunch of well-heeled fascist sons of bitches trying to open a doorway to Hyperborea and lead all the good Aryan boys and girls off to the promised land, etc. and etc. Ellison was sent in undercover as a heroin dealer from Tijuana, a Romanian expat named El Grau. So she shows up for this shindig, right? Hosted at some billionaire's mansion on the Griebnitzsee. And it's a goddamn unholy bacchanalia of Rhineland mysticism and far-right-wing politics, also known as pretty much what you'd expect. The cocaine and liquor flows like proverbial milk and honey. There's whores of every conceivable flavor and a veritable battalion of Berliner skinheads working security and armed to the nines. Shit, there's even...
Wait, Mackenzie interrupts. Nicodemo, isn't she from somewhere in Ohio? Columbus or Cincinnati or someplace?
Yeah, she's from Cleveland. So?
So wouldn't it have made more sense to establish her as an American expat?
The signalman looks up and glares at Mackenzie. Then he looks down again and glares at the pack of camels. The Doors song ends, and Neil Young's "Hey, Hey, My, My" immediately comes on to replace it.
Well, says the signalman. That would be a question for whoever was her handler at the time, and also for whatever geek was overseeing risk assessment. I assume Albany had their reasons, and you should follow my example. Maybe the Schwarze Sonne wasn't keen to deal with Americans or something. I don't know, because I wasn't there. It wasn't my call. And you're missing the point, besides. If you don't want to hear this, just tell me and I'll talk about something else.
Then the tooth reminds him how many times he's put off having it pulled, and so he has another mouthful of J.T.S. Brown. He also takes out one of the cigarettes, but he doesn't light it. He feels a little better just having it parked there between his fingers.
No, says Mackenzie Regan. I'm sorry, go on.
The signalman swishes and swallows the bourbon.
Yeah, well, anyway, he says. Turns out half these Nazi bastards and bitches were werewolves, and somehow we missed that. And here Ellison's walked into a pack of lycanthropes with no backup, no wire, not even a sidearm, just these two briefcases of uncut Mexican horse.
Mackenzie goes back to stirring her drink.
I sort of thought the whole point of Ellison Nicodemo is that she comes with the backup built in.
Well, sure. But this thing in Babelsberg, and you'd know this if you'd actually bothered to read the file, it was an exfiltration op. We were trying to get someone out, okay? There was this teenage girl, kidnapped daughter of a Canadian diplomat, if I recall correctly, and that night she was scheduled to be sacrificed as a blood declaration of faith or some blah 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 cultist shit, and Ellison was supposed to get in and get her out alive and in one piece. We'd worked a deal with Barbican Estate, and once the girl and Ellison were clear, London was going to level the place with an AIM-9 strike and write it off as a gas leak. Only a pair of Julia Set agents show up with their own agenda. They blow Ellison's cover, and everything goes sideways faster than you can say Jack Robinson. Total fucking bloodbath.
She used Tyndalos? Mackenzie asks, and the signalman shakes his head.
Nope. Not that night. But she still got that girl out of there, he answers. So, kiddo, when I say Ellison Nicodemo was good, that right there's the sort of shit I'm talking about.
Mackenzie Regan takes a sip of her vodka and cranberry. Most of the ice has melted, and now it's more L.A. tap water than anything else.
Okay, so what do you think went wrong that night in Atlanta?
What I think is that's yet one more question that falls outside the purview of my authority, replies the signalman, and so Mackenzie lets it drop.
I met a werewolf once, she tells him, up in Pennsylvania. She actually wasn't such a bad sort.
Just shows to go you, he says. Me, I'm gonna light up this damn coffin nail now, and management and the health codes of Los Angeles can go fuck themselves if they don't like it.
And with that, The signalman retrieves his Zippo from a jacket pocket and flips back the silver cap. He lights the cigarette and blows smoke at the ceiling. Mackenzie just shrugs and checks her wristwatch.
I still don't understand why we have to wait until tomorrow morning to pick her up, she says.
There's not to reason why, the signalman tells her, and he winks. There's but to do and die.
And then he reaches into his jacket again and takes out an envelope and lays it on the table next to the pack of camels. The envelope's crumpled and bent from riding around in his pocket, and there's what looks to be a coffee stain on one corner.
This is strictly on the QT, what I'm about to tell you, he says, then glances up at Mackenzie. But I'm telling you because I sort of trust you, as much as I figure I can trust anyone these days. And hey, you've been partnered up with me about 2.5 months now.
Okay, so what is it? Mackenzie asks.
My letter of resignation. When this is over and the dust has settled, assuming any of us live that long, I'm putting in for retirement. I'm too old for this shit. I've been too old for this shit for some time now.
The signalman watches Mackenzie's steel blue eyes, and sure, there's surprise there, but not half as much as he'd expected there to be. He's all too aware of his reputation as one of the last of Albany's true believers, a stone-cold MIB, the agency man through and through, balls to bones. The sort of man whose work is his life, and the sort of man who probably wouldn't last long without it. Definitely not the sort of man who voluntarily bows out of the game.
You're serious? She asks him, and starts to reach for the envelope, then stops herself.
Yes, I am, he replies. I came real damn close back in 2015 after that goddamn mess by the Salton Sea. I should've done it then, but...
He trails off and takes a drag on his cigarette.
You know they're not going to be happy about this, Mackenzie says. Do you really think they'll even accept it?
The signalman exhales a cloud of smoke, then picks the envelope back up off the table and returns it to his jacket.
No shit, they won't be happy about it, he says. But when they see I'm serious and that I'm not gonna back down, I imagine they'll let me go. Anyway, what's one more Cold War dinosaur put out to pasture?
Mackenzie sits up straight and crosses her arms. She looks past him towards the glowing red exit sign and the door leading back out onto Sunset Boulevard, into daylight and the shimmering, dusty wilds of La La Land.
I don't suppose why it's really any of my business, she says.
I'm wrung out, that's all. It ain't no more complicated than that. I've been at this business now for 37 years, since way back before you or Ellison were even born. And I'm simply too tired to keep pace anymore. I'm not that damn Energizer bunny rabbit beating on its drum. Surely there's a limit to how many times a mortal man can fairly be expected to come face to face with cosmic annihilation, and this thing with Jehoshaphat Talag and her little green fishmen, it's the last apocalypse I've got in me.
Neil Young gives way to Linda Ronstadt and Blue Bayou, and neither Mackenzie nor the signalman says anything else for 2 or 3 long minutes. He smokes his cigarette, and she stares at the exit sign.
Okay, she says finally. Are you going to tell her?
You mean Ellison?
Yeah, says Mackenzie.
You think there's some particular reason she needs to know?
Mackenzie shrugs again and rubs her temples. She's getting a headache. She hasn't had a good night's sleep since before the horror show in Gove City, and whenever she can't sleep, she gets headaches.
Never mind, she says. It's none of my business. Can I ask you a question?
You certainly can, he tells her, stubbing out his cigarette on the underside of the table and dropping the butt on the floor. Shoot.
Even if Nicodemo can still do what you want her to do, and even if she does it and everything goes off this time without a hitch, we're working on the assumption that killing the Talag woman will stop what she started. We're assuming that's the way it's going to work, yeah?
Yeah. The signalman replies. We are proceeding on that assumption,
And no, there aren't any guarantees, just like usual.
Is there at least a contingency plan?
Maybe. Possibly. We can always fucking hope. But nobody's told me one way or the other. Still, since you asked, I'm sort of thinking Ellison is the contingency plan.
Oh, says Mackenzie. She takes a bottle of store-brand aspirin from a pants pocket and stares at it.
You getting another migraine? The signalman asks her. Maybe it and my bum tooth could get together and compare notes.
He lights another cigarette. Listen, I'll be back in a minute or two, she says, then slides out of the cherry-red Naugahyde booth.
But you're okay, besides the noggin, I mean.
Yeah, she says. I'm fine. I just need to piss, that's all. The signalman nods, and she leaves him alone with his toothache and the defiant mighty middle finger of Johnny Cash, with his bourbon and dread and a nigh unto bottomless well of uncertainty about exactly what he's going to say to Ellison Nicodemo come Wednesday morning. Worse still, and worse by a long shot, about what he'll do if she puts up a fight.